in this winter weather, there's the sense that, yes, underneath the winter snows, what's the sound from the rose, lies the seed, which in the springtime becomes the rose, or the whatever that song is. And that's kind of the sense of the event Listen to Your Mother, which has become a really well-known and highly regarded event that happens every Mother's Day. But there have to be some seeds planted, and those seeds are planted in the auditions, which are a week from tomorrow, February 16th. We'll find out, especially if Listen to Your Mother is a new concept to you, we'll find out about that. And let's begin simply with one of the stories told from one of the recent presentations. This is Nicole Lohr.
Am I your mother? What makes a mother a mother? If she gives birth to you and abandons you, does she still have a right to be mother? If she does not birth you but nurtures you, can she ever do enough to earn mother? How I became a mother was different than I thought. I always dreamed of meeting my perfect match, exploring each other for compatibility, a wedding with dancing, time to learn one another like a student earning a degree. It almost was that exactly, except my son first sat on my lap at the age of 3, neither of us knowing yet what I would become. But we took the step, and I became the stepmother, the other mother, the not mother, but pieced into a type of mother all the same. If my child does not call me mom, does that make me less of a mother? For 3.5 years now, I have been a mother, but not capital M-O-M. I have taught my little K the intricacies of tying his shoelaces. I have taught him each methodical piece of how to skip. I have taught him that, yes, child, kids will call you names, but no, not by any stretch of the mind should you believe what they spit, because you are smart, you are creative, and you are more than they expect you to be. I have seen the wonder in your eyes when from the pages of a book you shared Harry's first broomstick ride. I have seen synapses firing, pulling fingers to form Lego structures that I, as an adult, could seldom dream. I have witnessed the moment when plans fail, crashing like one of your magnificent Lego creations falling from table to floor, tiniest pieces scattering to unknown corners, and you began to pick up your own pieces just like I taught you. Your silly tongue twister, you always repeat, "Hey, Nicole, say, how much stuff can you stuff until you're stuffed 3 times fast? Child, I have often wondered this about you, when at 4, you cautiously asked me why mom and dad don't live together anymore. Or when you told me confidently that baby girl will get to live with her sibling, you, all her life, all the while you mourn the loss of the life you had not with one, but 2 other siblings. Once, when you came to me in tears, convinced the teachers were bullying you right along with countless other kids, and when you get your hopes up because a promise has been made only ultimately to be broken, like a slippery dinner plate on concrete. How much stuff can you stuff until you're stuffed? To my dear little Kay, I may not have changed your diaper, but I have cleaned up and washed you after unexpected bathroom accidents. I didn't soothe you through teething, but I held you through massive dental work to clean your mouth of cavities. I wasn't there for the first word you spoke, but I witnessed your exultation at spelling your first word right on your spelling test. I did not carry you in my womb, but I have carried you countless times through tears and screaming, and while you were too exhausted even to move. Does that make me less of a mother to you than my sweet baby girl that I carry? No. I choose to love you, and though DNA may lie, I will tell anyone who asks that you are my children and I am your mother.
The story, Am I Your Mother, read by, created, told, very much told by Nicole lore. Let's find out what these stories that you're hearing are about. I have two of them, the two local founders of Listen to Your Mother in Spokane. Elise Ramey, we just heard an aspect of motherhood, but talk about the many aspects of motherhood that Listen to Your Mother takes care does.
That is one of the beauties of the show. The only restriction on any story that we tell is that it has something to do with motherhood. And from that charge, we have had stories that run a gamut I couldn't have imagined before we started. You have Nicole, who was just talking about kind of alternative ways to build families. We've miscarriage, stories about sharecropper grandparents, stories about grandmothers surviving the Holocaust, kind of big picture stories to really small, really intimate moments in the life of a mother. The stories truly run the gamut. It's anything you can think of that has to do with mothering, which makes it really exciting.
So that's the content that is delivered on Mother's Day every year for what? How many years? About 10 years or
this
so?
This is our ninth year.
Wow, nine years. That's been going on always at the bing of that event. But as I alluded to, there's a buildup to this whole thing. Well, first, let's kind of describe what goes on Mother's Day. Do you want to come in, Stacey Connor, and just describe what happens in front of an audience at the bing?
Sure. So the performance starts at 7 p.m. on Mother's Day at the bing. And for the past 8 years, we've had an audience of about 350 people who come in and hear 10 to 12 stories like the one you just heard, all somehow connected to the theme of motherhood. We laugh together. We cry together. We've been told over and over by cast members and audience, it's an incredibly connecting community event.
Nice. And it's one thing for an audience to sit there and hear stories. It's another for people to tell stories. And that's what your event week from tomorrow is about, is how to get people to tell stories. So either of you come in on the trials and tribulations and then the successes of that process.
It's a big ask. We ask people, our auditions are next Saturday. We have people sign up for a time slot, and then they come with their 5-minute story with anything to do with mothering. And Stacey and I actually both attended the Pivot event last night, and we were reminded just how much courage it takes to tell your story out loud, to speak truths out loud that maybe before you've held in your head or you've only spoken within a small circle. We have so much respect for the people who come in and share with us. The auditions are closed, so it's a little less intimidating. It's just Stacey and I who you are reading in front of, and nothing needs to be memorized, anything like that. You are welcome to read from your paper. But yeah, it's a very vulnerable spot to ask people to come in and share something with us, and yet somehow every year we are lucky enough to have tens of people come and do that, and from that we select our cast, and then we go on to the performance on Mother's Day.
Okay, and so that does begin a week from tomorrow with that set of auditions, and again, Google will usually help us out, but listentoyourmotherspokane.com is the address to find one's way into that, or emailing them listentoyourmotherspokane@gmail.com, but either way, I'm sure that by Googling to your website, they'll get all this information. So the trick right now for somebody that has 8 days ahead of them and is being intrigued and their attention piqued by this, it's to come up with a story. It's to decide what is your story. How do you encourage people to figure out the germ and then create enough of a story to bring into the audition?
It's difficult. We advise people, think about a moment in your life that just stands out. If you close your eyes and if you're a mom and you're thinking about your children, or if there's a moment that stands out with your own mother, or a moment from your family history that comes up every time you get together for Thanksgiving dinner, start there and start small, because the connection that you'll make with your audience will be in the details and in the day-to-day life things that we all experience in some way. and then build your bigger story or your bigger theme, if you want to use that word, around that small moment that is precious to you.
Nice. And to create the story that then, as you mentioned, they come in and then you have to make a choice. Well, let's keep thinking about the range of stories. There's one that I found very touching, a story that was told recently by Sarah Workman, and she titled it "To Repair with Gold."
"Look, Sensei, look what I found." On the screen of his smartphone, my student showed me a picture of a ceramic bowl with gold cracks running up the sides. It was a Japanese ceramic style called kintsukuroi, meaning to repair with gold. Kintsukuroi is the art of repairing pottery with gold or silver lacquer. The philosophy behind this art form is that a thing should not be discarded just because it is broken. It has suffered damage, but can be put back together in a way that increases its value and beauty. It is more beautiful for having been broken, more beautiful than when it was new. It has been 8 years. 8 years since the doctor doing the ultrasound on my third pregnancy asked me if I noticed anything about the 16-week-old fetus. "Not much fluid," I said. "And it isn't moving around much." "It isn't moving at all, I'm afraid," he replied. My heart cracked. Since it was a fetal demise and not a miscarriage, I had to have a DNC. Not everything was removed. A second procedure tore my uterus and left me bleeding internally. It took me the better part of 5 months to recover from the emergency laparotomy that was almost a hysterectomy. More pieces of me shattered. I got pregnant again. And again at 16 weeks, saw my fetus on the screen, motionless. Another DNC. More of me cracked and broken. This time, it was a girl. I had two boys. The absence of a girl left a hole in my vision of a complete family. It had never occurred to me, playing house as a child, that I wouldn't have a daughter. No daughter. Those words fell through the cracks in my limping heart, taking even more pieces with them. Anger gripped my broken soul. Negativity consumed me. I couldn't stand the sight of pregnant women or women with live babies. I hated hearing mothers of daughters complain about anything. Being close to large, happy-looking families threw me deep into depression. In my mind, big, messy, chaotic, bubbling families were better, and the women who created them were superior. I had failed. My body had failed. I was furious. And I couldn't let it go. I couldn't imagine feeling whole again or feeling beautiful, ever. But against my will almost, the cracks began to fill. Golden empathy and silvery new memories patched the holes. My experiences gave me the gift of being able to hold other broken hearts. The joy and challenges of watching my two gorgeous boys grow up distracted me from my grief and anger. And time smoothed over my bumpy insecurities and softened the sharp edges. My student's discovery reminded me that I can come to terms with my experience. I am a kintsukuroi, more beautiful for having been broken. Those cracks I suffered are a part of who I am. I can still feel them, but they add to my beauty and strength. I am not a failure. Life is unfair. But the pieces of me were put back together and made me more whole than before, more beautiful than when I was new.
Sarah Workman's story to repair with gold from a recent Listen to Your Mother presentation. I'm with the Spokane founders of Listen to Your Mother, Stacy Connor and Elise Ramey. And you mentioned Pivot, where you were last night, and the same thing exists there. When people have the bravery to tell very deep and personal stories, sometimes that they've never revealed to anybody, talk about your experience with that, because you've probably had quite a bit of it, haven't you?
It is one of the greatest privileges I've had in my adult life, I think, is getting to sit with Stacy and have these people open up to us, and then getting to take them on the journey from telling the story to the two of us in a room in auditions to standing on the stage and fully owning their story. There's nothing better than watching someone who has said, I'm auditioning, but I'm nervous, and I'd never be able to get up and do this on stage. Watch them sit down after they've done it, and everybody's clapping, and they're glowing. It's incredibly scary to be vulnerable like that. And I guess what I would say to people who are listening, who are saying, I could never do that, is that we have, every year after the show, these things that we call the Me Too moments, super cheesy name that Stacy and I came up with, where people in the audience, strangers, will come up to the speakers and just say, Me Too. Mm-hmm. That is my story, too. Mm-hmm. These dark secrets that we keep, things that we think nobody else has experienced, or it wasn't as horrible as it was inside of us when it was going on. Somebody else has experienced that, and to speak that out loud and then have other people kind of stand in solidarity with you is an amazing experience.
So getting from A to B, getting from the trepidation and the hesitation to getting up on stage and doing it, how do you do that?
We do a lot of nurturing of the cast, which is really fun for both of us, I think. We get everybody together at one of our houses. That's our first meeting. It's very intimate. Everybody reads their stories, and we talk a lot about vulnerability, about the power of vulnerability. And we really get to know each other. And Stacy and I work hard to kind of create a space that is safe and is respectful and is real. Everybody's allowed to have whatever feelings they have. And it doesn't mean if Sarah read her story and it was about miscarriage and your story is next and it's a hilarious story about the time your kid barfed all over Chuck E. Cheese, that's great too. There is space for everybody there. Mm.
And out of this experience over this decade, haven't the two of you kind of gotten a little more involved in the storytelling business and how to help people write and think and deliver?
We have. Mostly it started because people were nervous about auditioning, and they would come to us and ask us to help them with their piece or to help them kind of get things ready for auditions. And so we started running some small classes, group classes for people to write. And what we found was that really what people want in those groups is what Listen to Your Mother is also all about, which is connection, getting to know each other on a deeper level, sharing things in a deeper way, and that release that comes through art and sharing through writing.
Yeah. And so again, the first step is to think up and write a story, and then to make an appointment for a week from tomorrow. That's the 16th, Saturday the 16th, to have their appointment, and then that's the beginning of the process. I assume, how do you deal with repeat people, or do you try to make all sure it's always new people, or have people come back for a second story?
We have had repeat storytellers. Our general policy is that we don't like for people to audition in the next year after they've been in the show. Mm-hmm. And then when they do re-audition, we encourage them to tell a story from a different genre. So if they were funny the first time, maybe something more serious, vice versa.
That they would cover it up. The Listen to Your Mother auditions, which are a week from tomorrow. And again, it's you can Google it and you'll get there no matter what. Listen to Your Mother Spokane is the essential stuff, whether you're going for the to email and you follow it with the gmail.com, or simply just that you Google to their website, Listen to Your Mother. Listen to Your Mother's Show. Oh, wait. Your website is listentoyourmothershow.com.
It is actually listentoyourmotherspokane.com.
Oh, good.
Sorry about that.
Okay, it's consistent either way. So it's no problem getting the information to be able to do that. And so I think we're going to go out with yet another another aspect, because this does show the range of the stories we have, don't we? The one with Sarah Smith.
I love the story. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, thank you both for coming in, Elise Ramey and Sarah Connor.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
And here's this story.
I was 14 when she said it. I was 14, and we were in the car driving home from some inane errand when I informed my mother I was going to save myself for marriage. And she said it. Listen to your mother, I had been told by many adults in my life, and so I did. We all said that, Sarah, she giggled with a grin. Just remember, though, virginity is in the soul, not in the hole. I was 14. I had never even held hands with a boy, not once. And now we were talking about souls. And whole. I was mortified. Oh my God, I muttered. My mother was 15 when my grandmother said it. My mother was 15 when she faced her mother in the airport in Havana, Cuba, not knowing if or when she would ever see her again. My mother was 15 when her mother placed her on a plane to the United States of America to save her from the tyranny of communism, knowing with every fiber of her being that her daughter's life was more important than her own. Men only want one thing, my grandmother said. Guard your pearl. And with that, she put her daughter on a plane. It was years before I understood the importance of my mother's words. Years of sharing with friends in high school and college and adulthood that moment in the car when my mother bestowed upon me her indelible words of wisdom. Friends in high school dropped their jaws in disbelief. Friends in college cheered. Friends in adulthood have asked permission to turn her words into a bumper sticker. I have seriously contemplated that one. It could be quite lucrative. But ultimately, the answer is no. No, because the words are mine. The words were gifted to me. The words about souls and holes and pearls were never about souls and holes and pearls at all. Those words of my mother and my grandmother, I now know, were about worth. That's what mothers do with their words. They remind you of your worth. I was worth more than my virginity, my mother said. You are worth more than any man, my grandmother said. And so now I ask myself, what words do I want my boys to listen to? What words do I want my boys to remember their mother said to them one day in the car, on the way home from soccer, or on the day I dropped them off for a week at summer camp? Should I say, hey, loves, for the record? Fast cars are better than fast women. Or perhaps 15 seconds in the hay could cause a couple of eggs someday. My boys are 1 and 2. I suppose I have some time. But still I wonder, will they listen the way I did, the way my mother did? Will they tell their friends in high school what I once said only to make me seem a fool? Will they tell their friends in college only to induce some laughter? Will they tell their friends in adulthood because now they understand? I hope so. I really, really hope so. I only pray that someday they understand, behind all the hellos, all the goodbyes, all the pep talks, all the good for yous, all the I love yous, and all the cliches, every single one of them lie the words, you are my most precious creation. You are worth more than you will ever fully know. But I know, so listen to me. Listen to your mother, I want to whisper in their perfect little ears. Listen to the one who understands you will often lose sight of who you are. Listen to the one who will remind you who you have always been. Listen to the one who has known, who knew your worth before she knew your face. Listen, my boys, listen.
Three stories we've heard from Listen to Your Mother in Spokane. That was Sarah Smith that we were just listening to. And so that's an overview. That's a sense of what this program is, the possibilities, and again, the operative beginning is are the auditions at a week from tomorrow on the 16th, and simply by going to their website, listentoyourmother.com, and you will be there. And so that's the way to figure that out.